Now, when I think of sustainable design, I've got to say the first thing that comes to mind is not necessarily a 170-kilometre long, 500-metre high, mirror-clad megacity in the deserts and mountains of Saudi Arabia. Maybe that's just me. I'm referring, of course, to The Line. It's part of the NEOM project, a thing that began in 2017. The Line is an allegedly zero-carbon, sustainable building intended to house up to 9 million people. It's the vision of Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, and it's been described, perhaps somewhat breathlessly, as a civilizational revolution. Others are more circumspect in their response. One critic described it as clickbait visible from space, two vast and pointless lines of glass whose colossal construction cost would defeat the Vision 2030 plan to reduce dependency on oil revenues. Another critic, somewhat more succinctly, has described it as the Death Star with hanging gardens. Dr. Philip Oldfield is head of school at UNSW Built Environment Faculty of Arts, Design and Architecture, author of The Sustainable Tall Building, a Design Primer, a man ideally placed to join us in this conversation and discuss this extraordinary project. Philip, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Megacities. What's sort of the history of that as an idea? Is this something completely out of the box?
We've had mega developments for hundreds of years in some ways. And the Line is an extension of what corporations, cities and countries have done for eras, really. And that's to use buildings as symbols of power and advancement. So you go back to Bologna in the 16th century, and different families would build towers. And the taller the tower, the more wealthy and powerful you were. Or you go back to New York in the 1930s, and the great quest to build the tallest skyscraper in the world, with corporations like Rockefeller and Chrysler competing to build skyscrapers. And I think what we have with a line is a continuation of that, using a building to send a powerful message to the world about power and advancement.
It is an extraordinary thing, and I find myself looking at the promotional videos for it in two minds. I mean, the intention is clearly, yes, about power, but also about creating some, in some ways, a sort of a utopian vision of what an urban structure might be. I'm not sure which side of that to fall down on, whether this is a stunning and extraordinarily large grotesque, or whether it is actually something in this that, you know, cities as we know them now just spread hugger-mugger. Here is a way to consolidate that humanity in something which is potentially sustainable.
We know consolidation is sustainable, and we also know that the Saudi population is increasing. An extra 10 million people are expected to live in Saudi Arabia by, you know, the middle of the century. And so there is a legitimate need to build, and there's a legitimate need to build for future generations. And we've done it ourselves. We have a planned city in Canberra. Brasilia was built in the 1960s and now has 4 million people living in it. But I think and so this idea of creating a new city, a sustainable new city where people will live and be healthy and have all their needs in a compact and dense way, I don't think many people would argue with it. But the design of a line is so very extreme. I think that's it's pushed to the absolute kind of limits. And you know, so for example, the density will be, you know, 9 million people on a footprint of 34 square kilometers. And so that's a density of about 264,000 people per square kilometer. Now, the city of Sydney LGA is 8,000 people per square kilometer. So it's 30 times as dense as Sydney. It's twice as dense as Hong Kong. So it would be the densest place on Earth. And if you think about the scale of this building, so as you said earlier, 200 meters wide, so two footy fields wide, 500 meters high, that's like stacking two skyscrapers from the Sydney CBD on top of each other. But then it's 170 kilometres long. So it's like
stacking
those skyscrapers on top of each other and stretching to Newcastle, between Sydney CBD and Newcastle. Or another way of thinking about it, it's the One World Trade Center in New York repeated 3,400 times next to each other. So the scale of this, the ambition of it, is so extreme compared to what we're used to. I think that's what's confronting for a lot of people, particularly those concerned about the environment.
And within that, of course, we have this incredibly complex artificial intelligence supported, yes, dense, but with its own microclimate, with a lot of greenery hanging around, with services whizzing to and fro. The makers claim that they'll be able to whisk you from one end to the other in 20 minutes. They claim that any resident there will have effectively a five-minute city around them with all necessary amenities. I mean, it ticks a lot of boxes about how, as a planet, we will in the future, and this will be a necessity, deal with the expansion of our population without simply overrunning the entire planet with exurbia.
I think, you know, when you see the renders and the visualizations of inside, there's this utopian kind of aesthetic, you know, cliffs of greenery, people picnicking next to lakes on the 100th floor, looking down into kind of atria and dramatic cantilevers. There's even seen one vision of a stadium suspended between the two wings of the line at height. And look, it's all very, you know, utopian and it looks fantastic. When you dig a bit deeper, you think, well, how much steel and concrete do we need to build this? Mm-hmm. And you know, is this better than a 6 to 8 story city that might use a bit more space, but people can walk down streets? And fundamentally, we don't know. Nothing or very little like this exists around the world for us to understand how people would live there and what their lives would be like.
I guess the assumption that appears to be driving it to me, the only thing that would make this work, I think, in my mind, is if the surrounds of it were suddenly utterly inhospitable, that this was the only possibility for a sustainable existence was within something so measured and so constricted that this made life possible in some way.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my big question about it is about its form, about the line. So the idea of density, the idea of stacking up, we know they make sense, but why the line? From my perspective, I cannot see a functional or sustainable or human reason to stretch a building out over 170 kilometers. In fact, some Austrian researchers have published a paper called, you know, Why the Line Should Be a Circle. And they've shown that if you made it a circle, people would be closer to each other and you'd actually get more benefits.
What's wrong with an octagon?
I think the main reason for it being a line is to create an icon. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with that in reality. You know, we have an icon, we have multiple icons in our cities, but the city itself as an icon is a massive social and environmental experiment, which we don't know how it's going to go.
And there's an implication. I mean, I think that the natural human tendency in urban spaces is towards a gentle degradation of that space. You know, things decay, things crumble a little, things become a bit lived in. Something like this, the assumption behind it is of this impeccable, pristine, a maintained environment. And I imagine that to me implies a higher level of sort of social order or control.
So the closest example of a building I know to this is something called the Pinnacle at Duxton. And that's a building in Singapore. And there's 750-story towers. 3,000 people live in it. And it has sky gardens, a kind of a bridge connecting the buildings at the 25th story and at the 50th story. And we did some research on how people lived in this building. So we interviewed people in these spaces. And we found they really enjoyed these gardens in the sky. But the rules that the management enforced on these spaces were really restrictive. So they couldn't have parties up there. They couldn't eat on these spaces. Kids weren't free to really play on them. They had to play in a quite restricted way. And so, you know, the fundamentals of city are of a city, a successful city, are public spaces. And public spaces, you know, there's lots of different definitions of them, but I like the definition that you can have a picnic there. If you can put out a picnic blanket and you can sit there and eat something, then I think it's a pretty public space. If you went and did that in the kind of lobby of, you know, a bank tower, they wouldn't have that. So that's not a public space, even though it might
good
be
branded
definition.
As one. Yes.
Exactly. So the question is, with these kind of dramatic interior spaces, can people use them 24 hours a day? Are people free to use them in the many different civic and social ways that are so vital and create the diversity and vitality of our cities? You know, that's going to be very challenging to manage and to plan.
Well, it is interesting that the example you give is in Singapore and the example we're talking about is in Saudi Arabia. And I see, you know, there are some parallels and the extent of social control that that are imposed in those regimes, different as they are.
But we see it. We see it in many different places, particularly when we take so-called public spaces and put them at height. It's very easy to design a garden on top of a skyscraper, but how do you control how people get to it? So there's one in London called the Sky Garden on top of a 40-story skyscraper. And, you know, people have to go through kind of like airport security to get into these kind of spaces sometimes. People have to buy tickets. And so they really are not public spaces. They may be publicly accessible spaces. And the idea that we can kind of verticalize, you know, the city, you know, it's a very enthralling one. It's, you know, people can get behind it. But in reality, it's much more challenging than just designing some beautifully evocative green spaces at height.
And I'm wondering, you know, 80 years into the future, when the line enters its Blade Runner phase, what that internal environment, what it will ultimately, inevitably, as all human structures do, what it will devolve to.
Absolutely. Cities change, they evolve, people change, and cities change organically. You know, we can have great planned cities that have visions. You know, the plan when the Chicago plan came out, they always had this plan for four piers. Only one ever got built because there was only enough money for one. So will the whole line be built? We don't know. We don't know. Some have questioned whether it will be 500 meters tall or 50 meters tall. And it's very difficult to have control over the future. We are living in uncertain times and the future technologies are uncertain. You know, the line is also relying on, or the design of the line is relying on technologies which aren't entirely kind of mature at this stage, you know, very low carbon materials and very high tech kind of systems and you know, transportation approaches that are stretching at the boundaries of what we can currently do. And that's all well and good, but we don't know whether they're going to actually come out.
And we don't know either what the effect in the environment would be of a 500-metre tall mirrored object that stretches for 100 kilometres. I mean, that's quite an imposition of the landscape.
It is. And you know, the kind of developers and the websites say, look, the benefit of the line is it has a minimal impact on the landscape.
Yeah.
Which it does in terms of footprint. But the second you drag that out for 170 kilometres, you know, there's been questions over what that will do for migratory birds, you know, that might be migrating back and forth. And we know millions of bird strikes hit mirrored buildings around the world because birds can't, particularly at night, will fly into these kind of things. I mean, if a building is built to its full entirety, it'll be 170 square kilometres of mirrored glass. I ask a kind of functional question. Who cleans it?
I'm imagining a whole lot of people hanging off ropes in perpetuity, keeping the thing clean.
And then things like the expansion joints. So we know buildings expand and contract in heat and temperature differences. And no building is anything of this scale. I mean, for context, the largest building in the world is 1.7 million square metres. That's a kind of big shopping center, multifunctional shopping center in China. But this would be, if it was built, would be hundreds of times larger. So, you know, the largest office buildings in the world have 10,000 people working in them. You know, we're talking about a building with 9 million people living in it. And so you know, the word unprecedented gets bounded around quite a lot, but this is truly unprecedented.
Again, part of me is saluting the extent of that endeavour, and part of me is quietly appalled by it. I mean, this is, as I mentioned, part of a broader project, the NEOM project. I mean, can you describe the other elements of that for us?
Yeah, so NEOM is a multi kind of development kind of strategy, and it includes projects such as Trojena, which is a ski resort in the mountains, which I believe is bidding to host a Winter Olympics. You've got Oxagon, which is a kind of floating city, which is eight-sided, hence Oxagon, and a number of other kind of developments, which tend to be kind of luxury boutique hotel resort kind of developments. But the line is a main kind of crux of this that ties them all together.
And the other accusation, of course, is that this, like certain golf tournaments, is an attempt to recast Saudi Arabia in the popular imagination.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. So, at the moment, Saudi Arabia is building a 1 kilometer tall tower, which was paused for a while because I think it's it had some financial challenges, but it's starting again. So they're building the world's tallest building. There's reports that they're also building a 2 kilometer tall tower. So that's taking kind of 8 standard skyscrapers in Australia and stacking them on top of each other. So there's a lot of development, and a lot of that is investment from fossil fuel monies, investment from government in trying to create this kind of future cities, you know, which will be tourist attractions, which will provide the country with the necessary infrastructure and wealth of the future. But one has to question, you know, the environmental sustainability of things like, you know, multiple kilometre tall towers and 170 kilometre wide cities.
And I guess, I mean, as much as projects of this type can, you know, like we got certain biros out of the space program, there may be elements of the technologies that are explored in this which will have a broader benefit. I do wonder whether the better approach for humanity is to go straight to that broader benefit rather than focusing on starchitect projects of this sort.
I mean, it's entirely possible, and any criticism of the line has got to be contextualized that, you know, this shouldn't be a criticism against building future cities. We need future cities. So the United Nations say, you know, we need to build adequate housing for 3 billion more people by 2030. We need to build. But if the line or NEOM had proposed a city, a gridded city with 6 to 8 story towers that had shading, shaded streets, greenery, water recycling systems, places where people could walk, something that, but still had, you know, the embedded technology. So, you know, the highest solar panels, low carbon materials. I don't think it would be in the papers as much, but it would be much easier to make it sustainable. I think this is about creating a vision first and then retrofitting sustainability to it.
Philip, thank you. A brave new world in which such a creature may exist. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Philip Oldfield, Head of School, University of New South Wales, Built Environment, Faculty of Arts, Design and Architecture. He's the author of The Sustainable Tall Building, a Design Primer.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.